Various settings, and to say that's, you know, an AA guy. Greg?
Greg! Yeah! Great for Greg.
Thank you.
Greg.
I'm Greg. I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Greg!
Can you hear me back there? All right. Danny, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Excellent. By the grace of God, I've been sober since November 13th of 2010. Which I'm very, very grateful. There's a lot of people here.
Yeah.
It's just one big living room full of my friends. Okay? All right? But it's just my turn to talk. All right? Okay, let's pray. First things first. All right. I'm going to go to page 99 of the book, The 12 Steps and 12 Tradition. And let's have the St. Francis of Assisi prayer kick us off. What do you say? Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, and where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by self-forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Everybody said?
Amen.
I just want to tell you what I'm just so humbled to be up, and a little terrified to be up here talking to you guys tonight, okay? I'm just so grateful, and that's probably my overriding thought right now, is just one of gratitude for the founders, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and all the other ones that created this program that's produced so many miracles that I have the distinct honor to be a part of. I'm also very grateful for our city and how much of a commitment for recovery there is in this city, and to be exposed to just so many people and to work with so many people and carrying the message and seeing so many miracles just all across our city. And I'm very, very grateful to be a grateful member of the Serendipity Group. Woo, and I am just so happy that God put me in Serendipity's path. And I've seen so many front row miracles, and it's just been amazing. It kind of reminds me of a story about miracles we talk about. There was this guy, there's this police officer, actually. He was driving down the road and noticed a guy weaving, and pulled him over, went up to his driver's side window, tapped on it, guy rolled down the window, and just the reek of alcohol came out. And officer looked at the gentleman and said, sir, have you been drinking? And the guy looked at the officer right in the eye, very confidently said, no, officer, I have not been drinking. And the officer looked down at the cup, in the cup holder, styrofoam cup, one of those big ones, and said, "What's in the cup, sir?" And the guy looked at the officer dead in the eyes and said, "Sir, there's water in that cup." And the officer said, "May I see that cup, sir?" And the guy said, "Well, but of course," and handed him the cup. And the officer smelled the cup. He said, "Sir, that's whiskey in that cup." And the guy with the biggest grin looked at the officer and said, "Golly, Jesus done did it again."
Yeah, miracles. Okay. So let me start with my family background. I'm divorced, have a girlfriend, and I have three children, a boy 30, a boy 24, and a girl 23. My parents are divorced. My mom was remarried. I'm a stepdad. So they live in Houston. My dad was remarried several times and currently is not remarried. Okay. And he's in Conroe, Texas. Okay. And as far as my family tree, there's a lot of people with addictions in my family. You know, a lot of people have lost their life as a result of either drug overdoses or through alcohol. My hope for today is in preparing to share my message or my story on the way I was and what happened and what it's like now. I practice, you know, and I turn the outcome over to God, but I am hopeful, and I'm hopeful for really, it's okay to hope. I just want to say one thing that might help one person. All right. And this is my very first time to ever do this. I have zero experience being a speaker at a speaker meeting. So I'm going to ask for a little help. Because the deal is I want to make sure that I don't have Susan looking at me going like this 5 minutes and I'm still in my drunk along. Okay? So I'm going to ask, I didn't set this up. Chrissy, my friend Chrissy,
yes.
Could you do me a favor? I'm going to keep my drunk log, you know, the way I was, down to about 15 minutes or less. So could you give me like a sign? Maybe a sign. Can we pick, you know, so if I'm like in that and then I'm like not getting out of it, I'm not coming up for air, can you give me a sign? Can you kind of maybe go like this? Okay. So if I look over there, that'll help me out. But the reality is, guys, sometimes I don't see signs that good. All right? I've missed a lot of signs in my life. So if y'all see where we're at, we see Chris over there and I'm pressing through. If everybody could kind of go like that. Can we try that real quick? Okay. Very good. Thank you. All right. So 15 minutes. I want to ask you guys a question, and let's kind of engage like keep it kind of chill and informal. Do y'all remember how old you were when you had your very first memory, like your earliest memory? Shout it out. How?
Two, three, four.
Mm-hmm. 14. Okay. I want to hear your story. mine was four. And my earliest memory, we had moved up to Illinois for a year assignment with my dad's work. My sister was just born. She was just coming home from the hospital. She had been home maybe 2 days, and she was in a crib, and we were in a trailer. It was a long corridor. She started crying. She was in the back bedroom where we all slept, the kids. My parents were in the kitchen. She was crying. And I had this thought. This is my earliest memory. And I had this thought of just less than. Like, what can I do to make mommy and daddy like me? What can I do to feel worthy? So I had the idea, four, to climb in my sister's crib, gather her up in my arms, and I was 4 years old, climb out of the crib so I can take her down the hall to my mother, and maybe I would feel worthy. I would feel more than, not less than. And I remember that as my earliest memory. Well, my mother didn't react in overwhelming, gratitude at that point. The scream is still reverberating in Illinois. But that, I wanted to mention that because that being my earliest memory, that's been a dominating characteristic of me throughout my whole life, is feeling less than, feeling unworthy. It's my first memory, and it never left me until I came into this room. I was raised primarily by my mom, who's my hero. My mom took me to church. I went to church a lot. Sometimes I went 7 days a week. I never went on Saturday, but I went twice on Sundays, okay? And I would take lots of notes. I went to one of these churches where they just dissected each verse in the Bible, and I had tons of notes, and I learned a whole lot. I learned about everything but a relationship with God and how to receive God's love. I was a poor student, always got in trouble, bouncing off the wall. One thing I do remember growing up about myself is that I love sports. I played a lot of sports. My first drink was when I was about 11 or 12. I drank a Falstaff beer my dad gave me. It wasn't that remarkable, except that I just remember feeling, hey, my dad is earning some type of rite of passage from my dad. And I remember it was just awful, okay, tasting. I started drinking regularly in high school. And I started drinking, to get drunk. I've always been, from the very first, I never, drank socially. It was always drank until I got drunk. I sometimes lived with my friends in high school. My parents were divorced. Sometimes I lived with my dad. I bounced around a lot. Wasn't a lot of stability. In my senior year of high school, I got in a big fight with my stepdad. It was a discussion that wrapped about 15 holes in the sheetrock, okay, in our house. And I dropped out of high school right after football season, I remember that. And I got my GED and I joined the Air Force. And I went into the Air Force and my drinking became more of a priority. We would drink on the job. We had an assignment where we guard the munitions, and we drank and did other things, smart decisions like that. And there was one guy that told them, one of my friends, were doing that, and that guy got in trouble. So I went up there and to his dorm on the third story, the guy that ratted my friend out, and I hung him by his ankles outside the window, to teach him a lesson. That was the first time I got thrown in jail. And the government also told me they no longer required my services. And I came back to Houston. And I started a company with a friend of mine in the telecommunications business, and I worked part-time. We didn't make any money, but our business cards look good. it was a lot of credibility at the bars. But
hey, president, yeah.
But I worked at Foley's to pay the bills. And I worked a couple nights during the week and then some on the weekends. And I remember so many times going in there on Saturday and Sunday after just partying, and I didn't sleep. And I went to the bathroom just to rest, sit on the commode and rest for about 10 minutes. It's funny, I guess, but it's embarrassing. There are so many times when I'd be sitting there taking a little 5-minute cat nap, and I hear the click of high heels, walking in there, and I go, oh my God, I'm in the ladies' restroom again, And so I'd lift my feet, and then I'd sneak out, and it was, just a bad scene. About 22, years old, I met my, one other thing I wanted to mention is that around that time, I had a friend of a friend say, hey, can this guy that's a friend of our family's, he's in Ohio, he's having some trouble, can he come live with you? I lived in an apartment. I said, sure, I'll help him out. Came to live with me. He was always up at night, you know. I'd be passed out, you know, like 12 or 1, but he'd stay up all night. And I said, why are you up all night? And we found out he was doing coke. And so I said, well, I'll try some of that. And, you know, and I mentioned that. I'm a bona fide alcoholic. Let's just get that straight, okay? But it's part of my story. And as a bona fide alcoholic, I want more. Okay, so I started doing that, and fortunately, I was about 21 years old at the time. I didn't have much, but I was sticking needles in my arm and lost everything in about 3 or 4 months. I, broke my mirror in my bathroom and took the glass and cut my wrist and ended up in the hospital in the psych/drug alcohol rehab for a month. But I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready for a solution. About 22, I met my future wife. Got drunk one night. We lived in a 650-square-foot bedroom. And one drinking binge, I thought it was a good idea to go buy a dog. Hey, dogs are cute, okay? But we had an issue. Yeah, but there was a couple, you know, deals that I didn't really process correctly. Is that, number one is, a Great Dane may not be the best dog in a 650-square-foot apartment. And the second thing is I had no money. So I went to several different grocery stores to to write bad checks, to float bad checks. Okay. And anyway, that caught up to me, and that was the second time I got thrown in jail. I started climbing the ladder in my career, buying bigger houses, was never present. Kids, you know, started having kids, was never present. I missed important functions. I started drinking more. Passed out drunk every night. My ex-wife had to raise the kids and do everything else. I thought only of myself. My only contribution was financial. In the late 90s, I moved to San Antonio for my dream job. I was recruited. I had, you know, be a vice president of a big company. I was like in the top 50 out of, you know, 60,000 people. I had the money, I had the title, the stature, all the, you know, everything else. But I was a scared little boy inside. Nothing I could. I kept trying to find my identity in my job. It didn't work. The only thing that helped me, at least temporarily, was to drink, and I did that every night. And I started drinking alone because I was just came home and I just went in my garage and every night and I drank until I passed out. Drank more and more and more. My business, they gave me another business unit. This company to run. I was really good at it. That's kind of my skill set. And I became kind of like the golden boy. And so then, along with my inferiority complex, I became an egomaniac. Okay? So here I am, a full-fledged egomaniac with the inferiority complex. Okay? And I was just a scared little boy inside. You know? I'm just scared. And just miserable. Nothing could make me happy. In the year 2000, at the urging of my lovely mother, my hero, she came up. She had to leave several times because I was such a mess, but she was saying, Greg, go get counseling. And so finally I did. I went to go see a counselor for my depression problem. I was depressed, okay? And so I went to the counselor, and he had this questionnaire. It was at a church, and he said, Greg, I think you have an alcohol problem. And I go, really? You know? And I didn't really know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous or anything. And he goes, what you call this guy? So he gave me the guy. He ended up being my first sponsor, which his name was Manny V. Okay? And so I called Manny V, and Manny V said, I said, hey, Gene told me to call you. And he goes, okay, well, meet me at Club 12. And my first thought was, how strange. okay? For if I got an alcohol problem, why would he ask me to be meeting him at a club? It's the God honest truth. This is a true story, no embellishment, okay? And so he goes, you know where it is? I go, well, not really. He goes, you know, it's over there by North Star Mall. And, you know, I don't ask for directions, and I'm a control freak, and I knew everything. And I said, well, I'll find it. So we set the time. I went over there to meet with him, and I went North Star Mall, and I looked across the street and all that. And I went all the way down, you know, all the way up and down St. Pedro's. I must have stopped at about, I don't know, 10 or 12 bars saying, hey, you know where Club 12 is, okay? And finally, and I was like 45 minutes late. I didn't have like, you know, Google, find Club 12 or any of the, you know, those little things that you stick on your deal. I forgot what you call them, but any maps or anything. And so I was about 45 minutes late. How I got there, I finally stopped at the club. This nice lady behind the bar. She goes, honey, I think I know where you're looking for. And so she gave me the number, and she told me how to get there, and I got there. So anyway, I started going to, so that was the year 2000, and I was 37 years old. And I started going to a 12-step meeting each week, okay? And it was 12 steps, okay? It was using the steps in the book. It was not really plugged into the fellowship as we know it. It was a church recovery. But I didn't work the steps, man. Okay. And for the next 10 years, I would stay abstinent from alcohol for a period of time, a day here, 2 weeks here, you know, a couple months here. I lost my job, and they gave me a severance of a year. So here I am, an alcoholic with a year worth of salary in my pocket. Whoa. Dude, that was not helpful. And I started going to Bible studies, but I still wasn't taking the steps. And I tried different things. And, you know, I remember one time I was so excited that my ex-wife told me that Greg, you know, Austin, my oldest son, his friends are embarrassed to come over because of your drinking. And I go, okay, well, we'll fix that. We'll fix it. And so I called my son out there. I was drunk. And I said, son, I got some good news. Great news. I'm not going to drink whiskey anymore. I'm just going to drink beer. Okay. And I'm in it. With my heart and soul that everything's going to be okay, you know. And, you know, I tried, you know, I laid off a month. Of course, I picked February, the shortest month, you know.
All right.
I think I failed at that. You know, and I tried all the other things that they mentioned in the book, but nothing worked. And I, you know, went to God and I said, God, listen, what's going on, you know? I'm going to a meeting and, you know, I got a sponsor, even though I didn't really, you know, do what he said. I got a sponsor. Just be cool. Everybody else had a sponsor. It reminded me of, I felt like that guy in that story that many of us know, which is, you know, y'all remember Hurricane Katrina over there in Louisiana? Y'all remember? You know, everybody knows that, right? And the helicopter blades, the guy at Hurricane Katrina, was in his house and the water was rising and the Jeep with the National Guard came to get him and he said, no, God's going to take care of me.
Yeah, right.
And the Jeep left, the water rose and then the boat came to get him and he goes, no, I got faith, God's going to take care of me. He got up on his roof because the water was so high. The helicopter blades came to get him. Threw the ladder down, said, sir, come up. And he goes, no, God's going to save me. The water rose, he died, he met God. He said, God, I profess my faith. What happened? He goes, I sent you a Jeep a boat and a helicopter. What more do you want? And that's like me. God sent me the steps, but I didn't take them. About 2 weeks before, this was about 10 years after that Club 12 meeting, I kind of want to segue into what happened is that I was sitting in the, I was doing a lot of unhealthy things. I would, at this point, I had not drank for 2 years, but I was gambling. I played 104 rounds of golf that year. Okay. My wife told me she thought I was nicer when I was drinking. Okay. And I remember sitting at a poker game, one of my weekly, multi-weekly poker games, and I just played golf. I was about to play poker, and then someone passed me a joint, and I took it, and I went, well, at least I ain't drinking, and so about 2 weeks later, I had, I guess, my bottom, all right, and it was in year 2010. My son had just graduated the Air Force Academy, and we were having a poker party, and I hadn't drank alcohol in 2 years, and everybody left. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. There was a bottle of whiskey, and I said, man, I'm gonna drink that. And I drank it. And then I woke up, realized what I had done, and then I drank some more. And then my kids looked at me with just a sense of resignation and disappointment. And I didn't know what to do. I just had the most utter state of powerlessness that I've ever had in my life. I sat on the bed. I run out of things to try, and I run out of things to do. And I was thinking about, there's just no hope. And so I was thinking about how to go ahead and, just check out. And I didn't want to do that. And I just kind of threw myself down on the ground, kind of in a prostrate position. And I just said, God, I want to get better. I just don't know how. I want to. I don't know how. And then all of a sudden I had a spiritual experience, if you will, where God just kind of wrapped me in his arms and said, I got you, kid. I got you. I've been here all the time. I've just been waiting on you. And I went and called my sponsor. And I said, Manny, just tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do. So that was July of 2010. I was 47 years old. And I started taking the steps and doing what my sponsor said. I started to get better. I really started stepping up my game too, because I increased my, meeting attendance. I went from 1 to 2 per week. Okay. And they were both, kind of church 12-step recovery meetings settings. And on November 13th, I was at a deer lease, no phones, nobody in the program. And I walked by this bottle, and it was my bottle of choice. And I decided to take a drink. Nobody saw me. Nobody knew. And quite frankly, it was a while before I admitted it. And, as I started taking the steps, I began to learn how important honesty is in this program. And I was able to deal in a healthy manner with some heavy baggage and character defects by being honest. Hope began entering my life. Taking the steps, I made some mistakes, and it was usually around making amends.
many of mistakes, usually around making amends. One time, my ex-wife and I, our thing was like, we like to go to the movies. And we went to go see the movie, the one with Kirk Cameron, Courageous, was it? Or Fireproof, yeah. And anyway, it was really good. I mean, it really tugged on me. And when I got home, I felt the Spirit of God convicting me to go tell my wife about that thing. Okay? I felt Jesus Christ himself screaming at me to do it. Okay? Now, what I didn't know then, what I know now, is Jesus isn't a screamer. Okay? And my sponsor said that if I feel Jesus is screaming at me, then I should do nothing and call him. Okay? But I didn't know that then. So, we're divorced, okay? And it was kind of bad anyway, but, you know, that maybe probably sealed the deal, all right? A couple years in sobriety, I was real active, you know, in the church recovery meetings, going to a couple of meetings. And by the way, I'm so grateful for my church and all churches out there that don't sweep recovery under the rug and just say, hey, we want to take care of our flock and do the best we can. I'm so grateful for that. I'll be grateful to the churches and their recovery meetings that helped me along the way until I die. I'll be eternally grateful for them. But there was something in my life that was missing, and I couldn't put my finger on it. I went and talked to one of the guys there. Randy, it was Doug, actually. He told me, hey, why don't you moved over there to where I moved, where, you know, well, my wife and I split, and I sold our house, and I bought a house over there on Nacogdoches House in Oak Series School. He goes, there's a meeting over there called Serendipity. And I got to tell you, okay, a lot of people ask me, why didn't you go to, like, get involved in the fellowship before? I'm embarrassed to admit, but, you know, just being honest, I thought, you know, that, you know, A, people were just a bunch of doorknob, you know, worshiping heathens, okay? And I didn't want any part of that. You know, there's a page on 558 or something about contempt prior to investigation. Well, that was me, okay? But I said, you know what? I'm going to go check it out, all right? Amanda over there laughing. One of my first or second meetings at Serendipity, I remember, it's 8 o'clock candlelight. And it was really cool. And Amanda said, are y'all ready for the best meeting of your life? And I go, well, I am. Okay. I don't know what the hell this is all about, but I'm ready. Okay. And then she turned off the lights. Okay. And then the candles were on. And then the cat brushes my head. And you know what? You know what happened? You know what happened? You know what happened? I fell in love with you. Yeah. I fell in love with you. I fell in love with you. And there were three things I want to mention that, you know, kind of ramped up my recovery. Is I, you know, they had, like, you know, I was used to, you know, hey, there were two meetings a week. I went to them. I thought I was doing good. Hey, there were three or four meetings a day. Okay. I mean, man. Okay, this is the Mecca. And then, so I started going to, you know, a lot of meetings. And then I learned about service and carrying the message. There was, I've never seen it. And that was for me, just my experience, that was the key, man, is carrying the message and service. I mean, there was stuff on the board, there was announcement, there was this or that. It was like, whoa, man. It was mind-blowing, okay? And so I got real plugged into that, and I'm still real plugged into that in a lot of areas, and that is the key for me, is carrying the message. And, oh, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for AA. I'm so grateful for Serendipity. I'm so grateful you were chairing that meeting. And the last thing, the three things that I just want to mention about, you know, what ramped me up in my recovery and getting plugged into AA is there was an acceptance, okay, of wherever you are, whatever you believe in, as far as your conception of God, it's cool. It's not going to impede your recovery. That's the message that I kept getting. And so what I saw was that it was a new experience for me to this level, is I saw the pure power of God at work. There was no individuals interfering or constructing or deflecting that power. I saw an amazing thing, that God meets me where I am, wherever that is. And he met all these miracles I see everywhere, every person exactly where they were. And that was amazing. It was a spiritual experience for me that I will treasure for the rest of my life. This whole program helped me through major adverse situations, divorce, two kids, two of my three children, multiple rehabs, multiple addictions. One is 4 years sober, doing well. All right. And one is not well yet, but there is hope. Yeah. And I just want to pay homage to the Ninth Step Promises. Can I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What a joy it's been realizing the Ninth Step Promises. I mean, what a joy. I just wanted to kind of, I could talk for days about all the promises with the Ninth Step as they're listed there in the book. But I just want to kind of give an example on the first three. Is number one is we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I awaken to the truth that my identity is in God, not what other people think about me. I can burn the mask that I wore for so long. I can be vulnerable and transparent. That's freedom. That's a real happiness for me. Number two, we will comprehend the word serenity and know peace. I am learning that as long as I am dependent on the program of AA, my peace is not dependent on my circumstances. Three, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we can see how our experiences can benefit others. How can my experience of 10 years of, you know, slip and relapse and slip and relapse and in and out, I mean, how could that be used for good or anything else? How in the world? It's amazing that the people that God has put in my life to walk with that come to me and say, I'm hopeless. I've been to detox 9 times. Hey, dude, there ain't no such thing. You got air in your lungs. There's hope. Let me share my experience with you. Okay? And God just keeps putting people that have multiple relapses like me, you know, like I had in my life. So I'm so grateful that I can use my experience for usefulness. What it's like now? Well, let me just kind of explain my routine. In the morning, I wake up and I read the daily reflections. And I read, you know, Upon Awakening in the big book to remind me of, you know, how I'm supposed to do this thing and what I'm supposed to do. I read the St. Francis prayer that we did earlier on page 99 of the 12 and 12, which tells me, you know, to get out of myself, to think of others. I read a Jesus Calling devotion, send that out. I'm so glad that Mitch's in this program that, you know, not replaced, but go and seek, you know, other things that could be helpful for you. And Mitch is that in the Upon Awakening. I do meditation, you know, I have a little app on my phone. And I have an app on my phone, a centering prayer app on my phone that I set for a time, and I just agree to be in the presence of God, just be still with God. And after that, then I go into some specific prayer. Or pray for others. I pray for myself. Try to pray for myself if it's useful for others as well. Okay. Progress, not perfection. The AA program is ingraining in me a process to follow. You know, it's teaching me how to do things like, you know, my morning routine. But it's also how to teaching me how to deal with stuff that pops up. Step 10 is kind of like my, you know, my first tool in my bag. And so whenever I have unrest or things bother me, I go to step 10 and I do an inventory. And then if sometimes what I find is that when I go to step 10, that sometimes I find that I'm doing the step 10 on the same things rather frequently. Okay? And so, but that's okay. Then I can go to step 6. Okay? And then maybe I'm not ready for that. So then I go to step 2. Am I really, you know, believe that God can restore me to sanity? I work on that. Or maybe it's a step 3 issue. I go to that. Or maybe, you know, that thing that I was kind of telling you about, you know, a minute ago, okay, about my morning routine. Have I done that for the last 3 mornings? Well, no. Well, maybe we need to focus in on step 11. Or how's the service stuff? How's the carrying the message? And then what happens is this grid, the steps that I have to work, that's been given me to take, rather, all right? Then it points me, then I can return back to step 6, okay? And then I can go to 7. And then what happens is, by doing it this manner, what happens is that probably the biggest benefit about this program and what you guys have given me happens, is I realize that these character defects that I've had all my life has been deflecting the love of God from pouring into me. It's kind of like this cup. I've been walking around like this. God's love has been pouring into me all the time, always, but I've been deflecting it. And what happens is when I remove through these steps, through this treatment program, when the character defects are starting to go away, then I'm turned over and I'm able to receive the love of God, and it's poured in me. And then the most special thing that happens is that cup gets full. When I get full with the love of God, it starts overflowing to other people. Okay? And I hear about, well, maybe, Greg, maybe you can't love everybody. If I'm receiving the love of God and it's overflowing to other people, I think it's impossible for me not to love other people. The only way that can happen is if those character defects start coming up and I start deflecting that perfect love and pouring into me and overflowing to other people. I am a little wobbly right now because I've had a tough road, to be honest with you. I've had a lot of things hit me here lately on multiple fronts, and I can talk about, you know, step 10, pivot to 6 and 7, if not, then 2 and 3 and 11 and 12, and I'm doing all that, and I'm still like, dude, okay, I'm not hopeless, but I'm in a tunnel. And I think that's light at the end of the tunnel, and I hope it's not a train, okay, you know? I don't feel hopeless, but I need help. And that's why this program, for me and my experience, I'm so glad that I'm not supposed to do this alone. I mean, in this room right now, just in the last week, there's 8 or 10 of you that I've talked to. Tom, I love you, man. Okay? Chris, I love you, man. Greg, I love you. Barbie, love you. Jimmy, Amanda, Courtney, you know? Tommy, Susan, all you people, you know, help me. Miriam. Te amo, corazón. Muchos besos, querida. I don't want to sit here and tell everybody I love them except my girlfriend. You know, that wouldn't be smart. my relationship with kids is being restored. My daughter, who would not talk to me, is she's one of my best friends now. Okay? She's one of my best friends. I got a call. I love these calls. My son called me like yesterday, my oldest in St. Louis. He's 30. I love it when they start the conversation with me off with this. Dad, I'd like your opinion.
It's amazing.
Wow, thank you, God.
I can understand that.
My relationship with my relatives is very healthy now. My dad, who's 77, and he's just a little over 4 years sober. He's in the program. Our conversations are so good, and I'm able to be a kid listening to him. Okay? It's just wonderful. My stepdad, who was terrible, he and I are tight now. I've had two sponsors in my 17, almost 18 years from the first time I went to Club 12. My current sponsor, Greg S., okay, is so helpful and so loving and has so much experience. And you know how you meet people, and I'm so grateful to God, I'm grateful for you, Greg, is how you meet somebody, and when they talk, it's just, you know, he can say the same thing, someone can say the same thing to another person and not connect, but to me. But to you, it's like bingo, bingo, bingo. I'm so grateful. And thank you. I have a new set of friends, including my new best friend, Chris E. Okay? He introduced me to the joy of backpacking. I don't know if I've ever told you that in hiking. I don't know if I ever told you this, Chris, but when I went to the time that I knew that, you know, I bonded with you, we were hiking at the Enchanted Rock, And you paused and you go, hey, you see that tree over there? And I said, yeah. And he goes, would you like to go listen to that tree? And I said, sure. Why not? You know, I'm open-minded. And so it was a big old tree. I don't remember what it was. Do you remember what it was? But anyway, it was, and I got under it. The branch kind of toasted the trunk, and Chris went up there. And he put his ear right on the truck, and we stayed there. It seemed like hours. It was probably about 2 or 3 minutes. And it was pretty cool. We walked away, and we were kind of serenely, you know, staying in the moment, walking down the path, and Chris goes, Greg, what did that tree say to you? And I said, well, Chris, you know, I was really getting into the moment and getting in the present, and you know, I didn't have a lot of distractions and my mind was real quiet, but to be honest with you, bud, I'm not sure if that tree told, you know, really told me anything, you know. But that's cool. And then, you know, we started walking some more and I was dying at this point. I said, Chris, what did the tree tell you? This is it. This is my bonding moment with you, my friend. Chris said, the tree told me that everything's going to be okay. Yeah. I said, yeah, I like that. And that's what this program does for me, through people, through trees, through friends, through trees, through friends to me. You know? I have a girlfriend that's better than anything that I could have ever imagined. Beside my ex-wife, I've never really had a girlfriend before, you know? And she's kind of in a similar situation. I was married for like 29 and a half years, you know, when I was like 22, 23. And A's been instrumental in the health of our relationship. God is in the middle of our relationship. We pray when we part, whether it's on the phone or whether in person. We thank God for being in control of our lives and ask Him to direct our steps. She's got two lovely children. One beautiful, her oldest daughter sitting next to her, Angelica, Angel. And she's so pretty, and as pretty as she is on the outside, she's even more beautiful on the inside. And they're in a situation that maybe it might be helpful to have someone in their lives that's a positive influence. And I'm well now, and I can do that. What a gift. And I love you, and I love your sister. To close out what it's like now, let me just say that my life used to suck, and it doesn't suck now. Yeah. My life turned around when I immersed myself into the practices and principles of AA. It is my hope to continue receiving this gift and passing it on. Let's close with page 164, reading the last two paragraphs. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously,
You cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. I want to be in the fellowship of the Spirit. How about you? And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.